Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book titled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. Today's presentation is on an investment calculator available at that website titled The Stock Return Predictor. And as you see with the first slide, the first thing I want to, the way I'm going to set this up is I'm first going to give some background on the calculator, go through several slides, and then I will turn to screenshots of the calculator itself and describe how you can make use of it. But the first thing I want to persuade you of is why this matters. Why should you be spending your time learning about this new calculator called the Stock Return Predictor? So slide number one is the promise. What is the promise of this calculator? What can it do for you? You can know your stock return in advance. This is truly amazing. I believe that in days to come, as this calculator and others, I believe that there will be many calculators doing the same thing that this one does in days to come, at websites all over the internet, in books and magazines and all the places where people go to get stock information. I consider this a basic tool, the most basic tool of investing possible, one that every investor should be making use of before he or she puts money in stocks. You can know your stock return in advance. Isn't that investor heaven? We all know that we need to invest in stocks. We need the returns of stocks to have a realistic chance of being able to finance our retirements. But most of us worry about investing in stocks because while stocks provide great long-term returns, stocks, we know, or at least we think we know, stocks are risky. The outcome is uncertain. You can lose large amounts of your money, and we've especially seen this in recent years. People often refer to the years from 2000 through 2010 as the lost decade, and in late 2008, we had a major stock crash, made investors very anxious, made millions of middle-class workers who are investing in stocks to finance their old-age retirements anxious and nervous and worried. But look what the stock return predictor is telling us. It is telling us you can know your stock return in advance. If you knew your stock return in advance, you wouldn't be nervous. You wouldn't be anxious. You wouldn't be worried. So what this calculator promises to do is to change the history of stock investing by making it possible for the first time in history for investors to know before they put their money down on the table what sort of return they're going to obtain from stocks. And so when you finish this presentation, you absorb the information. The information is not complicated. Nothing I'm going to say is complicated. But it is shocking. And sometimes it's hard for us to take in huge advances because they are so shocking. So it may take when you finish this presentation, I hope you will circle back and ask yourself, what is the promise that Rob talked about when he first began his presentation, and has he delivered on that promise? Has he truly convinced me that there is now a tool available on the internet at the PassionSaving.com website where I can, that will teach me how to know my stock return in advance? And if he has, if you believe I have at the end of this presentation, I hope that you will conclude from that you need to learn more about the new strategy for stock investing called valuation-informed indexing that I explore at that website and in other presentations like this one. So that's the promise, and I've set a high bar for myself, I think. I'm sure you agree. And now let's see if I can deliver. Let's see if I can deliver on that promise and actually persuade you that the stock return predictor will let you know what your stock return is going to be before you put money down on the table. Before I go any further, I need to describe two caveats. so that you don't think I'm totally crazy. I do believe I can deliver on the promise. I can let you know your stock return in advance. But there are limits to what the stock return predictor can do. You know, we haven't quite reached heaven just yet. So there are two major caveats. And I want to get those out on the table before we start so that you know I'm not trying to pull any funny stuff on you. All right, two caveats. One, no short-term predictions. What a lot of people are looking for when it comes to stock investing, and you see this, the media is responsive to our desire for short-term predictions. So if you go looking in magazines and books and websites, what you'll see over and over and over again is people talking about how are stocks going to do in the next 6 months? How are stocks going to do in the next year? How are stocks going to do in the next 2 years? This is always the focus. Now, the stock return predictor doesn't even try to answer that question. If I could answer that question, if I could put up a calculator that would tell you how stocks are going to do over the next year, I would have 1 million people at my website next month. But I can't. And there are a lot of websites that try to do it or claim to do it. I don't think, and my personal view is that none of them deliver on that promise. And so I don't even try. We'll be turning to screenshots of the return predictor shortly. And when we turn to it, you will see that I don't even aim to give predictions of where stocks will be in 1 year or in 2 years or in 3 years. The predictions in the stock return predictor are long-term predictions. I give predictions starting at 10 years out. And why do I do that? Because this is a research-based calculator. It's not Rob Bennett's opinions of where stocks are going to be in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. It's a calculator that uses the two things, the historical data, the historical stock return data. We have data for stocks going back to 1870. And research, academic research, on what works and what doesn't in stock investing. And so what this calculator tells you is, what can we tell you scientifically? Not what can we guess, okay? And we can't predict short term. At least today we don't have the tools to do that effectively. So I cannot honestly stand here and tell you I know where stocks are going to be a year from now. I don't even try because I think it's a big waste of time and energy. I think you're wasting your time trying to figure that out. And I think you'll just hurt yourself spending too much of your energies trying to figure it out. But we can, this is amazing enough, we can effectively predict where stocks will be in 10 years. So that's where I think we should be directing our energies. The second caveat, even the long-term predictions are not precise. And you'll see when we turn to the screenshots of the stock return predictor, I don't give any short-term predictions. I do give 10-year predictions, and I give 20-year predictions, and I give 30-year predictions. But even the 10-year predictions and the 20-year predictions are not precise. What we can do, what we can legitimately do in a scientifically a valid way is I cannot tell you exactly where stocks will be in 10 years. But what I can do is I can give you a range of possibilities, and that range of possibilities changes as valuation levels change. The price at which stocks are selling is always changing, and small changes don't make that big a difference. But big valuation changes make a very big difference. And that the purpose of this calculator is to help you sort through how you need to change your stock allocation when you see a big change in valuations. And so what we can do is, knowing the valuation level when you're purchasing stocks, I can give you a range of possible returns that will apply in 10 years. And I can identify points along that range. I can identify rough probabilities of various outcomes. So I can say the stock return that you're going to receive for stocks you purchased today, we're talking about purchases of a broad index fund, the return you are going to receive in 10 years is going to be somewhere between X and Y. And then I can give you probabilities for each point between X and Y. I can say the most likely return is 3% real, but it's possible it may drop Possible it may only be 1% real. Possible it may be as high as 4% real. It's going to be somewhere between there. And the most likely return is the one in the middle, the 3% real. That's the sort of thing we can do legitimately. And that's what we're going to limit ourselves to. So I'm making a very big claim. You can know your stock return in advance. But there are two very important caveats. And we want to be realistic. We don't want to oversell. That's one of the problems in the stock selling industry, in my humble view, is overselling. A lot of people are trying to advise you on stock investing. They oversell, and that gets you into trouble because it gets you emotionally hyped up. And instead of looking at what the research really says, you're living in illusion. And then when stocks don't perform the way you're expecting them to perform, you're, of course, disappointed. And that leads to all sorts of troublesome results. So those are the two caveats. No short-term predictions. Predictions are not precise. Okay. What are the benefits? What are the benefits of knowing your stock return in advance? Well, to a large extent, they're obvious, but I don't think it hurts to point them out, at least briefly. Number one, you dramatically reduce risk. If you have a tool that tells you when returns are likely to be poor, well, what strategic implication obviously follows? The strategic implication is, in the year 2000, in January 2000, stocks were selling at the highest prices they have ever sold in U.S. history, going all the way back to 1870. That tells you that your return going forward from January 2000 you were likely to experience the worst return of any investor who has ever invested in stocks. That was the most likely outcome. So you knew that the risk of stocks was sky high in 2000. So what would you do as an intelligent, realistic investor? You would lower your stock allocation. And wouldn't you be better off today if you had lowered your stock allocation back in January 2000, put your money into another asset class earning a higher return? There were treasury inflation protected securities is the safest asset class on planet Earth. It has a government guarantee attached to it. TIPS, treasury inflation protected securities, were paying a return of 4% real at that time. So you could have moved out of stocks that were paying a likely return very low and that were super risky and moved your money, or at least moved a large portion of it, to a far safer asset class paying a far higher return. Obviously, you'd be able to retire years sooner if you know when to do that. So the number one benefit of using the stock return predictor is dramatically reduced risk. Benefit two is higher return. That's really just the other side of the coin. As I pointed out, you wanted to lower your stock allocation in 2000 because you didn't want to experience the stock crash that had become inevitable at that point because we had allowed stock prices to get so high. And so you didn't want to experience those low returns, but you also, when prices go back to reasonable levels, you want to move your money back into stocks because when prices move back to reasonable levels, stocks will once again offer a appealing long-term value proposition, and you want to take advantage of that. So if you know, now think about this. Say that you moved a good portion of your money out of stocks in the year 2000 and you protected it, and you continue to protect it until stocks are again offering a high long-term return, and then you move your money back into stocks. Well, you're going to have more money to invest in stocks because you didn't live through that stock crash. You didn't lose half of your assets in a stock crash. So now, when stocks are again paying the average long-term return of 6.5% real or perhaps higher than that, perhaps 10% real, or perhaps 15% real, there are prices at which stocks provide a likely long-term return of 15% real, if you can believe that. And those days are probably coming again within the next 5 years. If you protect your assets when stocks are highly risky, you have more capital available to invest in stocks when they pay super high returns. So you obtain more of those higher returns And of course, you reach financial freedom years sooner, you're able to retire years sooner. So you not only get lower risk, you also get higher returns, dramatically higher returns in many cases. Point number three, benefit number three, emotional balance. Stock investing is, at least historically, it's been like being on a roller coaster. There are these time periods when prices go to the moon and, investors experience what Yale economics professor Robert Shiller called irrational exuberance. Do you remember the headlines we were seeing in the late 1990s? Stocks were going up 20% a year. Investors were very, very excited. But now they experience the lost decade and they experience the stock crash. And in all likelihood, we have worse times up ahead for stocks over the next few years. With a few upward, we'll have upward swings mixed in. But the overall movement is almost certainly going to be down hard. So investors have these times of irrational exuberance when they're very, very excited, and then they have these other times when they're depressed because they've lost so much of their money and they have to rebuild and they basically have to start their retirement planning over again. Well, the investing strategy that follows from use of the stock return predictor is called valuation-informed indexing. It's an approach in which it's the alternative to buy and hold. With buy and hold, you keep your asset allocation constant. You choose an asset allocation for you, a stock allocation, and you stick to it. With valuation-informed indexing, you don't keep your stock allocation constant. You change your stock allocation for as needed, not often, but perhaps once every 8 years or so, with the purpose of keeping your risk profile constant, not your stock allocation, your risk profile. Because stocks are far more risky when they sell at high prices and far less risky when they sell at low prices. So if you go with a lower stock allocation when prices are insanely high and a higher stock allocation when prices are insanely low and there's virtually no risk to stock investing, your overall risk profile is roughly constant. And that means you don't have this irrational exuberance. In the late night, if you had followed this approach, the strategic approach that follows from use of the stock return predictor, you would not have had a high stock allocation in the late 90s when stocks were very, very dangerous. So you would have had some stock allocation and you would have experienced some gains, but they would have been more modest, more moderate. But then you wouldn't have been experiencing the panic that followed from the stock crash because you would not have been heavily invested. All stock crashes come at times of insanely high prices. We've never had a stock crash of any consequence that did not come at a time of high prices. So you avoid that. So you avoid the emotional ups and downs of buy and hold investing, the conventional approach to stock investing, by following the investing strategy, valuation-informed indexing, that follows from use of the calculator we're talking about in this presentation, the stock return predictor. All right. How is this possible? How is it possible to predict stock returns? I have to keep this brief because otherwise I won't have time to go through the screenshots of the calculator itself, so I'll keep this condensed. But I need to describe a little bit how this is possible because otherwise you just won't believe me. The claim here is so extraordinary that without some description of this, I just don't think I can really have much hope of persuading you that the calculator does what I say it does. How is this possible? Number one, indexing. Indexing, the investing strategy I'm suggesting here, valuation-informed indexing, is not buying individual stocks. It's not buying mutual funds. It's buying a broad index fund. And broad index funds became available in the mid to late 1970s with John Bogle's founding of the Vanguard Group of Funds. And index funds have become increasingly popular over the years since. And I think index funds are wonderful. I think John Bogle is a genius and a pioneer and a hero to middle-class investors for for bringing the index fund to us. I think he made a mistake with his promotion of buy and hold investing. But that doesn't take away the many wonderful contributions he's made, by any stretch of the imagination. Index funds are what make this all possible. If you're investing in individual stocks, I have to tell you, the stock return predictor won't help you that much. It might help a little. If you're investing in individual stocks, the stock return predictor will give you an idea of where the overall market is headed. So if you want to know, you know, what the risk of a stock crash is, or how investors are going to be thinking about stocks over the next 5 or 10 years, 15 years, the stock return predictor will give you some important clues. But it will not, I cannot honor the promise made in that first slide of letting you know your stock return in advance if you are going to invest in individual stocks. This only applies for purchases of index funds. And the reason is, many people, even the most ardent advocates of indexing, do not today realize how important a change we made in investing when we made index funds available. The true magic, index funds allow you to have broad diversification at low cost. And that's, of course, a wonderful thing. That's a good thing. But they do something else that I think is even more important. What index funds do is they hold, throughout history, when people have invested in stocks, there have been many, many issues they've had to research. They have to research what types of managers are running the company, what type of competition the company faces, the new product pipeline for the company, all these things. There are dozens of things that investors like Warren Buffett, you know, have to look into. Well, if you look into all those things and you pick stocks based on that, that's called value investing. And I think value investing is actually the best investment strategy there is. It's actually better than valuation-informed indexing if you execute it properly. But becoming a value investor, an effective value investor, takes years of work. You have to be willing to study stocks at night when you go home from your job, and you need to be willing to study stocks on the weekends, and you need to do it for many years and gain experience. And if that sounds great to you, you should do that. But middle-class people need a more simple way to invest in stocks, and that's what John Bogle provided us with his promotion of the index fund concept. So what index funds do that is amazing is they do offer broad diversification at low cost, which in itself is amazing, but they do something else. When you buy a mix of all the stocks, this is what you do when you buy an index fund. What you're doing is you're buying a tiny share in all the stocks. You're not just buying one stock. You're buying a tiny share in all the stocks. And essentially what you are buying is a tiny share in the productivity of the U.S. economy. That's really what you're buying. And when you do that, all these other issues become unimportant. They become inconsequential to you. You're going to have some companies, when you buy an index fund, you're going to have some companies in your basket of stocks, your index fund. You're going to have some that are going to have wonderful management, and you're going to have some that have terrible management, and some in the middle. And you're going to have some that have a great product pipeline, and some that have a terrible product pipeline, and some in the middle. So you don't need to worry about that. You've essentially neutralized all those questions. And there's really only one question that remains when you buy an index fund. You're going to obtain the market return. And in the U.S. economy, going back to 1870, has been sufficiently productive to support an average annual return for stock investors of 6.5% real. That means 6.5% plus whatever the inflation rate is. So if you assume an inflation rate of 3% a year, roughly, your return on stocks should be somewhere around 9.5, perhaps 10% a year. And this is what we've seen historically. If you buy an index fund, you're ensuring that you will not do better than that. That's the downside of index funds. And frankly, as I say, if you're Warren Buffett, you can do better. Warren Buffett does better than that. So if you're Warren Buffett, you can do better, but you're probably not. And if you're not Warren Buffett, you're better to not fool yourself into thinking you are. So, you're better in an index fund, in my view. 90% of middle-class investors are better in an index fund, in my view, and in John Bogle's view, and in the view of a lot of people. But if you buy that index fund, there's one thing that you still have to worry about. You don't have to worry about management. You don't have to worry about the research pipeline. But there's one thing you do have to worry about. You have to worry about the price you pay. Because if you pay too much for your stocks, you're not going to get the, let's use six, the average return in the U.S. is 6.5. Let's use 6% to make it more simple, to make the math more simple. Say that the return is 6% per year. Now, if you buy at fair value, if you buy when stocks are selling at a fair price, you'll get that 6%. What if you pay double for that 6% income stream? Well, if you pay double, you're spending $200 for every $100 worth of income stream. Okay? So you're going to get the 6% on the $100 income stream. You're going to get $6 a year coming in for every $100 of stocks you buy, every $100 of index fund you buy. But you paid $200. So your return's not 6%. Your return is half of 6%. Your return is 3%. Okay? If you pay three times fair value, which is what stocks were selling for in January 2000, then you're paying $300 for each $100 income stream. So if the $100 income stream generates a 6% return, which is good in itself, your income stream is only 2% because you pay $300 for that 6% return. So you do need to look at price, and that's the one mistake that Bogle made in my view. He did not tell indexers who follow his strategy that they need to change their stock allocation in response to big price swings. Valuation-informed indexing, unlike buy and hold says you don't need to change your stock allocation in response to big price swings. Valuation-informed indexing says you must do this. It doesn't require frequent changes, but it does require a change in allocation on average every 8 to 10 years. And if you do that, you will earn these higher returns at greatly reduced risk. All right, I need to stick to the slides so that we can get to the screenshots of the calculator. How is this possible? Number one, indexing. Number two, research. These are not Rob Bennett's opinions. This is research. And if you want to see the research supporting this, please go to my website, passionsaving.com, and go to the homepage of my blog. My blog is called Rich Life. And down the left-hand side of the page, I have quotes from 80 or so people. Some of them are experts in the field. Some of them just ordinary investors, commenting on the work I've done in the investing field. And you'll read what a lot of people have had to say about this. And I think you'll agree there's a lot of solid research backing this up. Just recently, there was research published by Wade Fowl. He's an associate professor of economics at the National Graduate Institute for Policy Studies in Tokyo, Japan. Put his name in the Google search engine. Wade, W-A-D-E, Fowl, P-F-A-U. And put in Wade Fowl, you can put in valuation-informed indexing, and you'll have some research come up that he's published at his website. And he compares valuation-informed indexing with buy and hold. And he found that valuation-informed indexing beats buy and hold in 102 of 110 30-year rolling periods, time periods, now in the historical record. So valuation-informed indexing virtually always beats buy and hold. And that's because you're looking at price before you buy. And you really, I try to keep this simple, you really should be thinking, is it ever a good idea not to look at price before you buy something? If you bought a car or you bought a house, or you bought a computer, you would look at the price. Well, you should be doing the same thing when you buy stocks. So what's made this possible is, one, indexing. None of this was possible before indexing. That's why you haven't heard about it. It's a concept that only became possible in the post-John Bogle, post-indexing era. Two, when Bogle started buy-and-hold investing and the others who started buy-and-hold investing, they did not have the research needed for this approach. That research came with Robert Shiller's research published by Yale professor Robert Shiller in 1981. So it's only been 30 years that we've had this research. And three, as long as buy and hold was popular, an approach developed before the research was available to us, remember, there really was not much interest in this because people were satisfied with buy and hold. But now that buy and hold has caused this stock crash and this economic crisis, and I do believe that buy and hold caused the economic crisis. You can read more about that at the website. Buy and hold caused us to remain in stocks when they were selling at insanely high prices, and the losses that we've suffered have caused middle-class people to be afraid to spend. They're trying to make up the money they lost in these stock crashes, and that's causing us a lot of economic turmoil. But now that buy and hold has failed, people are opening their minds to new investing ideas, and I think this is a good one. So this, the reason you haven't heard about it until today is that it was not possible until the development of indexing, and it was not possible until Robert Shiller's research in 81, and it was not possible for it to be broadly publicized until buy and hold collapsed. And now we are open to hearing new ideas, and I think the stock return predictor is going to fill the void that a lot of people are looking for today. All right, the last slide, and then we will get the screenshots for the stock return predictor. How does the calculator work? The calculator, the stock return predictor, performs a regression analysis of the historical stock return data. I mentioned that we have data going back to 1870. Regression analysis is a statistical concept. What it means is the calculator determines the extent to which the valuation level that applies on the day you buy an index fund is correlated, all these are statistical terms, with the return you obtain at the end of a certain time period, 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. And then it simply reports to you through the graphics and the tables that are generated after you enter a PE10 value into the calculator. It reports what return is likely, what return you're likely to see at the end of that 10-year period. So all you have to do, the calculator, you need to understand the calculator, and that's the purpose of this presentation. But once you understand it, it's all very simple. The only thing you need to tell the calculator to do, the only thing you need to do is to add the PE10 value. If you turn to the calculator page at the website, it's passionsaving.com/stock-valuation.html, or you can just go to Google and enter in the stock return predictor, and it'll be the first result. Go to the stock return predictor, and the only box you have to fill in is the PE10 value that you want to investigate. And you actually don't even have to enter that. The calculator is set up so that the default result, the result when you just go to that page and you don't enter in any numbers at all, is the return scenario for the PE10 value that applies today. Today, the PE10 value is 24. So the last thing I need to tell you before we can turn to the calculator screenshots is, what is PE10? PE10, the number you're going to enter into this calculator, the new PE10 values are reported at Robert Shiller's website and some other sites around the internet. Not too many, but a few. It's becoming more popular. And I think it's going to become a lot more popular in days to come. The PE10 value is a valuation metric that works. It's been tested. It's the most effective valuation metric. You've probably heard of the PE value. That's the price-earnings ratio for stocks. The PE value is a flawed metric. Flawed metric. Sometimes works. Sometimes does not work. It generates a lot of false positives and a lot of false negatives. But PE10 is the metric that is used by people who understand valuations. Obviously, it's used by Robert Shiller. It's a more effective valuation metric. And the reason is, what you're looking at with the PE10 value is, you're comparing the price of the index today, current price, against the average of the past 10 years of earnings. And the flaw in the one of the reasons we've not heard of these sorts of ideas in earlier times is many people have tried to use the PE value to predict stock prices. And it sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. And the reason it sometimes doesn't work is you're comparing the price against an artificial earnings number. If the economy is depressed, like it is today, the earnings number tends to be artificially low. And if the economy is going gangbusters, the earnings number tends to be artificially high. So the PE value you're getting doesn't really tell you where stocks are headed over the long term. But when you take an average of 10 years of earnings, as we do it with PE10, you're getting a more realistic earnings number. And when you do that, voila, you find that throughout the history of stock investing, we have always been able to predict long-term returns. Not short-term returns, doesn't work. But we've always been able to predict long-term returns. So let's turn to our default graphic, the graphic that applies when stocks are priced as they are today. And today's stocks, this presentation was recorded in March of 2011. And the PE10 value that applies today is 24. That's on the high side. The fair value PE10 is 14 or 15. The lowest we ever go is 7 or 8. That's half a fair value. When we get to 28, which is double fair value, we're in insanely dangerous price levels. That's where we were for almost the entire time period from 1996 through 2008. And we actually got to a high of 44. When we got to 33, that caused the Great Depression back in 1929. That's the highest value we had ever been at prior to the late 90s. But in January 2000, we went up to 44. So we're in scary days today. We're recovering from the most insane overvaluation we've ever seen in the history of the U.S. stock market. But let's try to look at the bright side. We've now got a tool to avoid this, avoid having this ever happen again, avoid ever again doing this to ourselves. So here's the graphic. For when the PE, this is the graphic that will turn up on the calculator when the PE10 value is 24, as it is today. That's not 24 is not. I would call it high. It's certainly high. It's not quite insanely high. I'd say 25 and higher is insanely high, but 24 is knocking at the door. It's about as close to 25 as you can get from my understanding of math, which is limited. So 24 is awfully high. And if you look at this graphic, let me tell you what you're seeing. What you're seeing is we have four color bars. We have green, blue, yellow, and red. The green, and then, of course, we have different time periods. We have 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and 60 years. No short-term predictions. Don't send me an email, Rob. Where's it gonna be next year, Rob? Tell me. You know? No, I don't know. I don't know, and I won't tell you even if I do. We can't make short-term predictions. They don't work. They don't work. I don't even have opinions anymore about it. I just don't care. It's foolish to waste your time with short-term predictions when you could be studying scientific information, genuine, valid academic research on where returns are going to be in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. Okay. This is where we're headed. 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years starting from March 2011. The green bar is telling you the best results you can get. If these are the luck, see, we don't know. What we know is we know what the odds are for different outcomes, but we don't know precisely what outcomes going to come up. There's a certain amount of randomness, okay? So the green color bar is telling you the best results you can hope for if you buy stocks today. That's if you're, you know, that's the best possible. The blue color bar is telling you lucky results. They're better than average, but not quite as lucky as the green results. The yellow results, that's if you're unlucky. If you're a little bit unlucky, you're going to get a return somewhere in that yellow bar of possibilities. And if you're very unlucky, some of us are, if you want to prepare for the worst case scenario, you look at that red bar. That's telling you the worst that can happen. You know, if everything goes to hell in a handbasket. So You see, at the 10-year mark, we have a pretty broad range of possibilities. It goes from negative, the worst scenario. Now, please understand, I don't predict a negative four. The return I'm giving you, the return goes down the vertical bar. And the worst return you will see on that graphic is a negative 4.2. That doesn't mean a one-time negative return of 4.2. This is the result I'm giving you is an annualized 10-year return. So that means over 10 years, you would earn that negative return on average every year. In other words, for 10 years running, you would lose 4% of your money every year. You would obviously at the end of this have lost more than 40% of your money. Okay? Very, 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 very bad. Very bad. We don't want that. Okay, but that's the worst case. That's as I say, if hell, you know, if it all goes to hell in a handbasket. If you want to get the most likely return, you look where the blue bar meets the yellow bar. And today, at the prices we're at today, that's a return of about 1.8. Not too good. Not too good. A little better than what you can get in money markets, but given the risk of stocks, I would not be going with a high stock allocation when the most likely return is 1.8 and the worst case scenario is a negative 4.2 every year for 10 years running. Okay? Stocks do not offer a strong value proposition today. Do not. The best possible return is 7.8. Now, that's, of course, excellent. That's outstanding. But there's only a 5% chance you're going to get that. The odds are stacked against you. If the most likely result is that 1.8, and if you think that you're likely to be a little unlucky, then you need to go into that yellow bar. Now, notice what happens if we go out to 20 years. 20 years, the bars shrink, and that's good. That means we're getting more precision with our predictions. So the range of possibilities. Now, if you want to limit the range, the one thing you can do, you know, a lot of people don't like that broad range at 10 years. Because it's hard to work with. The numbers are, you know, so varying. It's better to have that range than have nothing, to have no prediction at all. But it would be nice to have a more precise prediction. What you can say is where the blue color bar meets the green, that's the 20% possibility. Those returns are that's the 20% possibility. So you can say there's an 80% possibility that your return is going to be less than 4.8. Or looking at it from the other perspective, where the yellow meets the green, is a negative return of a negative 1.2% annualized. You can say there's an 80% chance your return is going to be better than a negative 1.2 annualized. Or you can the simplest way of saying it is just your most likely return is 1.8. 1.8 real every year for 10 years. Okay? Your stock return. That's your future stock return. Research-based. Now, when you go to 20 years, you have more precision. The range of possibilities, it only goes down to about, what is it? A little lower than, you know, it goes into negative territory, but it's about, I guess it's a negative 1%. And then on the upside, it goes up to about a positive 7. So it goes between a negative 1 and a positive 7, something in that neighborhood. So you have more precision, and of course you have even more precision. Look at the precision at 30 years. 30 years, you can do very good predictions. Very good predictions. So the farther you go out, the better your predictions get. This is what the data tells us. Now, at 20 years, your most likely return is better than it was at 10 years. It's 2.8. So it improves. But 20 years is a long time. So if you're willing to wait 20 years, okay. Then if you're willing to wait 30 years, you got a pretty good return. At 30 years, where the blue and the yellow bars meet is about 6% almost. That's a real good return. So it's true in one sense what the experts tell you. They say stocks are always best for the long term. Well, if you're willing to wait 30 years, it's true. But if you're only willing to wait 20 years, I don't know. Is 2.8 best? I think you could beat that. Certainly, it's not true at 10 years. 10 years, the most likely return is 1.8. You can certainly beat that. Even if you can't beat it with anything today, You can lower your stock return, and after prices improve, you can then move your money into stocks, and you'll get much higher returns, as you'll see in upcoming graphics. So that's the graphic that applies for today's valuation levels. And as you see, precision improves at 20, precision improves again at 30, and then it stays roughly the same, 40, 50, and 60. And the returns pretty much stabilize. There's a little variation from 30 years to 40, but 30, 40, 50, and 60 are all pretty similar. 20 is a significant improvement over 10. 10 is not good at today's prices. So that's our graphic for where we stand at today's valuation level. A PE10 level of 24, which is not good. Now let's take a look at the table of results, which is not as fun to look at as those color bars, but a little more clear in the numbers. This is the table for that graphic we just looked at, and I'm just bringing this up to show you. When you use the calculator, we've already gone over these numbers, but when you use the calculator, you might want to look at the table to sort of pull everything in one glance, you know. But you then want to look at that's the graphic. And then you want to look at the table to clarify in your mind what the numbers are. A little easier to read the numbers on the table. So your most likely return, as you see on this table, at today's valuations, is 1.8. Again, that's an annualized real return. That's the average return you should expect to see over each of the next 10 years. Something around 1.8. And if you're worried about the worst case scenario, that's pretty darn bad. Worst case scenario, 4.2, negative 4.2. So if you can't hold for 10 years, losing 4% a year, you probably shouldn't be going with a high stock allocation today, because it's only a 5% possibility you're going to see that worst case scenario. But there are a lot of bad scenarios that aren't quite as bad as that. And if you get anything like that worst case scenario and you can't hack it, you'll end up selling your stocks at the worst possible time for doing so, and obviously that's not going to work out well. So, you know, if you can't handle that worst case scenario, you know, it may not be for you. Stocks may not be for you at this time. So, okay, I now want to pull up the graphic for what happens when you have a PE10 level of 8. And a PE10 level of 8 is very low. It's half a fair value. Here's that graphic. And, boy, you see a big difference with this graphic. You see, instead of the color bars moving upward over time, which means the return is getting better the longer you hold, here we see the color bars moving downward over time. So what this means is, when you buy at half a fair value, your 10-year return and your 20-year return, instead of being bad, are likely to be very, very good. But after 30 years or 40 years, you're probably going to get to a situation where your return is roughly equivalent to the returns we saw when you buy stocks at a high price. In other words, the 30-year, the 40-year, the 50-year, and the 60-year returns tend to be somewhat stable. It doesn't much matter. Valuations don't much matter at 30 years out and longer. But they matter a lot at 10 years out. And they matter a lot at 20 years out. So that's why I say you need to look at valuations when you purchase stocks, because that's going to determine how long you can hold your stocks. If you purchase stocks, now this is important. When I talk about the PE10 level of 8, we're nowhere near there today. We'd have to drop 2/3. But guess what? There's a good chance we are going to drop 2/3. Whenever we go to insanely high stock prices, and we've done this 4 times in U.S. history, we always drop in the following 10 years or so, maybe a little longer than that, in the following 10 or 15 years, we drop to price levels, not only fair value, we drop to half of fair value. Why? Because when we're at insanely high prices, people start to count on that money. They start to think that money's real and they can use it for their retirements. Stocks always return to fair value. Even John Bogle, Mr. Buy and Hold himself, acknowledges that reversion to the mean is an iron law of stock investing. So you know, when we get to the sort of prices we were at in 2000, 3 times fair value, in the next 10, 15 years, we're going to be falling back to fair value. When we fall back to fair value, everyone's going to have lost so much money, trillions of dollars, that the economy is going to go into either a massive recession or a depression. And that is going to cause the market to collapse even more. We always end up at half of fair value, at least historically. If we end up at a fair value this time, over the next 5 years or so, that would mean another stock crash, lowering stock prices about 60-65% from where they are today. That would be a P10 level of 8. So this is where we're probably headed. Now, that's depressing news if you have a heavy stock allocation. I apologize, but I feel bound to report this. It's better that you hear it from me than hear it by seeing the numbers on the last page of your portfolio statement. So that's a live possibility. Now, if that happens, we will then have the greatest time to invest in stocks in many, many years. Look at the numbers at 10 years for this this graphic where P10 is at 8, half of fair value. The most likely 10-year return, 15% real. That's not one time. That's every year for 10 years, an average of 15% a year, every year for 10 years. That's how people get rich, investing in stocks. And the low, look at the bottom of the red bar. There's only a 5% chance you're going to hit the bottom of that red bar. The number there is in excess of 8% real every year for 10 years. Yeah, that's 80%, not counting compounding. Throw in compounding and you've doubled your money. It's the worst case. The best case is 20% real every year for 10 years. 200%, not counting compounding. That's tripling your money. Okay? Those are the kind of times when you want to be sure to be heavily invested in stocks. Okay? That's what we see. That's what we see if we invest in stocks at a P10 level of 8. We're not there today. That's where we were in 1982. Go ask somebody who was invested in stocks heavily in 1982 how they did. And they'll tell you. They can't believe how well they did. They made more money in the next 10, 20 years than they thought possible. That's the situation we'll be in the next time we drop to a P10 level of 8. And I think we're headed there, and the historical data indicates we're headed there sometime over the next 5 years. So you want to be preparing for that today. So if you put your money in something safe today, maybe you think you're not earning that big a return, and you're not. Returns for safe asset classes are low today. That's not such a big deal, because if you earn 1% real for 5 years, and then you earn 15% real because you then move the money to stocks when the P10 level drops to 8, your overall return for 10 years is not 1%. It's 1% and 15%. You know, it's somewhere in the middle. It's 8%. Okay? So protect your money today, and you'll have it available to you when the P10 level, when the valuation of stocks becomes much more reasonable. Here's the graphic that applies when the P10 level was 8. And that's all this graphic does is report the numbers I just read to you. Most likely return for 10 years, 14.5. Worst case scenario, 8.5. When the worst case is that good, is it fair to say, you know, people say stocks are risky? When the worst case scenario is a return of 8.5, is it fair to call that asset class risky? I say no. That's not risky. There is no risk. The only risk you have in stocks when the P10 level is 8 is that the U.S. economy could collapse. And that's what brings the P10 level of 8, that there are people afraid it's going to collapse. So that's a real risk, and I can't say different. But, you know, if the U.S. economy collapses, nothing works, right? So I feel you have to, you know, we're all sort of in this boat together and, you know, hope it doesn't collapse. Do everything you can to see that it doesn't collapse. But if it does, you're no worse off in stocks probably than just about anything else. But if it doesn't collapse, you're going to get a huge gain. over the course of 10 years. Not 1 year, not 2 years, not 3 years, 10 years and longer. Okay, the let's see. Here's the graphic for, this is fair value. P10 level 15 is fair value. So this is the norm. This is what should be the norm with stock investing. And you'll see, let me just read this. I pulled up the wrong table. Let me pull up the, okay. So the norm is a return going 10 years out of something in the neighborhood of 6% real. This is the norm with stocks. The risk is not that great. The downside risk, the worst case scenario is obviously not that appealing, but not really all that bad. And my personal belief is the risk of stock investing is overstated. There are risks. But if you come to understand valuations, if you come to understand PE10 levels, if you come to understand the stock return predictor, you can prepare. You know when the bad times are coming. The bad times always follow high stock prices, okay? For perfectly understandable reasons. The market has to, the purpose of a market is to reflect, is to tell you the price of things. So, I really think the risk of stocks is, the way to think about it is the risk of stocks is concentrated. Stock risk is not, the buy and hold model sort of suggests that stocks are always equally risky. The valuation informed indexing model posits the opposite, that risk is concentrated. People who invest in stocks at times when prices are high are taking on enormous risk, far, far greater risk than they realize. But people who invest in stocks only when prices are low or moderate are taking on not that much risk. So that's what I want you to do. I want you to invest in stocks primarily when prices are low or moderate. So for example, you might go with a 30% stock allocation when prices are very high and stocks are very dangerous. You might go with a 60% stock allocation when prices are moderate, somewhere around a P10 level 14, and you might go with a 90% stock allocation when we get to those mouth-wateringly high returns that we see when the P10 level is 8. All right, here's a graphic for what applies when the PE10 level is 44, and I'm really just showing you this to show you how bad things were at the top of the bubble. Look at that 10-year number, negative 1% real, the most likely return on stocks back at the top of the bubble, January 2000, was a negative number. I mentioned to you that Treasury inflation-protected securities were at that time paying a return of 4% real. Stocks were paying a likely 10-year return annualized of a negative 1% real. So the differential at that time was 5 percentage points of return every year for 10 years running. Do the math. If you lose 5% of return every year for 10 years, you've suffered a combined loss of 50% of your initial portfolio value. The portfolio value you had at the beginning of that. So if in January 2000 you had a portfolio value of $100,000, by choosing stocks over tips, you were likely going to lose $50,000 over the next 10 years. That's the benefit of this calculator. If you used this calculator in January of 2000, you would have known to shift most of your money to tips. And you'd be $50,000 ahead at the end of 10 years. And, if you had use bigger numbers, then it's even worse. You know, you had a $200,000 portfolio, you lost $100,000. By going with the expert advice, and I put expert in quotes, to always go with a high stock allocation. No, go with a high stock allocation when the long-term value proposition of stocks is good. Go with a low stock valuation when the sort of prices that applied in January 2000 apply. Okay, that's what the stock return predictor does for you. It warns you away from stocks when stocks are dangerous. It tells you to invest heavily in stocks when the long-term value proposition is very strong. Now, again, This is long-term investing. You're not going to be changing your stock allocation, you know, every month or every year or anything like that. You're going to be changing it only when the long-term value proposition changes dramatically. The long-term value proposition for stocks was positive from 1982 through, really from 1975 through 1995. We had 20 years where you didn't have to, you could have gone with a high stock allocation and that would have made perfect sense. From 96 through 2008, the value proposition was very poor. Should have been going with a low stock allocation. For a few months at the beginning of 2009, we went back to good prices. There were, I don't know, 3-4 months there where you could have gone with a higher stock allocation. And now we're back where stocks are dangerous. So during from 75 until 2011, you really only had to make one allocation change in 96, maybe one in early 2009, And that's it. And now when prices go down after the next crash and if they go down anywhere near P10 of 8, you're going to want to make, even if they get to 10, I mean, you're going to want to make an allocation change. You're going to want to move your stock allocation up. Right, here's the table for 44, and that just, again, it reports the same thing as the graphic. Worst possible scenario? Worst possible scenario, January 2000, negative 7%. Real. That's 7% a year for 10 years running. That's 70% of your money gone. That didn't happen. But please understand, it's not really good news that that didn't happen. It's not good news. What the fact that it didn't happen, all that means is that we're not finished paying the price for that overvaluation. What's happened is we've experienced some of the downside of those insanely high prices, but not all of it. So that's why we're likely to see more. Stocks may go up the next 3 months. Don't come back to me and say, Rob, you said prices are too high. Stocks went up. I cannot tell you how it's going to go in the short term. Okay? What I can tell you is 10 years from now, if you buy stocks today at today's prices, the odds are strong that in 10 years you're going to wish you hadn't. Sometime over the next 10 years you're going to wish you hadn't. So to wrap it up, let's go back to our promise. You can know your stock return in advance. I think I've honored that promise. I've told you a way to use the historical data to get the probabilities of stock investing on your side. I've told you how to know in advance when stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition and when stocks offer a poor long-term value proposition. And if you do that, you can change your stock allocation. Rarely, infrequently, but every now and then it's required to keep your stock risk profile roughly constant. By doing that, you will lose less in stock crashes, and we're all going to see stock crashes over the course of an investing lifetime. You will lose less in stock crashes. You will gain more when stocks are priced to go up dramatically, and you will reduce the emotional turmoil of stock investing dramatically. And I think that may be the biggest benefit of all. Because I don't believe that any stock investing strategy works unless you stick with it for the long term. Stocks are just too volatile in the short term. You need to stick with your strategy for the long term. And no middle class person can stick with stocks for the long term with the turmoil they bring on sooner or later. Remember what I said earlier in this presentation. Stocks are priced today to offer another stock crash within the next 5 years of probably 65%, something in that neighborhood. And that's after the losses we've already seen during the lost decade, where we were all losing ground on our retirement plans and through the stock crash and through the economic crisis. That's on top of all that. But those who knew about valuation-informed indexing, those who knew about the stock return predictor, were going with low stock allocations, and they were protected from that. So when stocks are again priced well, we will be able to reap the benefits of those low prices. okay? Because we haven't suffered that emotional turmoil. And the payoff will be higher returns. Remember what Wade Fowles' research showed. Valuation-informed indexing beat buy and hold in 102 of the 110 periods now in the historical record. Higher returns, less risk, less emotional turmoil. I invite you to study the valuation-informed indexing concept, and the first thing you need to know to become an effective valuation-informed indexer is how the stock return predictor works. I think of this tool as the price tag of stocks. If you buy stocks without knowing your long-term return, you're essentially buying them blindly, and your retirement is too important to be buying stocks blindly. So I urge you to at least give some thought to the stock return predictor. And if you find this idea at all appealing or interesting or convincing, I invite you to go to the PassionSaving.com website, go to the A Rich Life blog, and look on that left-hand side of the page and look at some of the comments that experts and ordinary investors have put forward about these ideas. And I hope that I've persuaded you to at least explore the ideas. Don't go into it if you're not absolutely persuaded, please. Please. I'm trying to present an idea to you, not to bulldoze you into doing something that you don't feel 100% confident about, but do explore it. I do think it's worth exploration. I personally am persuaded. This is what I follow in my personal life, and I find I do have higher returns. I firmly believe I've been investing with less risk, and I certainly feel a lot more confident about the long-term prospects of my strategy. And I feel a lot less emotional turmoil, I think, than most buy and hold investors. So I encourage you to take a closer look. Thanks for listening. Take care.